Good morning, Terry. And for our listeners, today we'll be talking to Terry Cross, Executive Director of the National Indian Child Welfare Association. This is the third in a series of interviews with prominent leaders in the child welfare field and members of our SPARC Advisory Board. Terry is the leading advocate on best practices and policies for American Indian and Alaska Native children in state and tribal child welfare systems. Terry has 41 years of experience working directly with children and families, teaching, writing, and promoting best practices. He served on the faculty of Portland State University School of Social Work as adjunct professor for 15 years and has authored numerous social work articles, chapters, and reports on issues related to American Indian and Alaska Native child welfare, children's mental health, and juvenile justice. In 2009, Terry received the Civic Engagement Award for Excellence in Community-Based Research from Portland State University, and in 2010, he was a finalist for the EcoTrust Indigenous Leadership Award. In June 2011, he received the prestigious Robert F. Kennedy Children's Action Corps Embracing the Legacy Award at the Kennedy Presidential Library in Boston. Terry received his master's in social work from Portland State University in Portland, Oregon, and he's an enrolled member of the Seneca Nation. Terry, welcome to the SPARC podcast series.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Wonderful. Well, you are clearly the best person to talk to about issues facing America Indian and Alaska Native children. So, Terry, as SPARC thinks about what child welfare advocates we need to know, we really think it's important to start with some basics. So most child welfare advocates are familiar with how public child welfare systems work, but they might not be aware of the unique role of the American Indian and Alaska Native tribes in child welfare. Can you explain for us how this works?
Sure. Well, the role of tribes in child welfare is based in the sovereignty of tribes as dependent nation states. Tribes predate the United States, and recognition as sovereigns is recognized in the United States Constitution. So one of the things that's reserved to a sovereign nation is the protection of its children as part of something called civil regulatory jurisdiction. And there are, so tribes all over the nation have responsibility for the well-being of their children, and those services can be quite varied. There are 567 federally recognized tribes in the United States, and the average tribe size is about 1,500 people, though they range from just a handful of people all the way up to almost a 500,000 in the case of the Navajo Nation. And so tribal child welfare programs can be very diverse, ranging all the way from an agency that provides a kind of a watchdog service, seeing what is making sure that the rights of the tribe's children are protected in state and county systems, all the way to full service child welfare systems that look very much like a state or county system. And tribes have both a role with their tribal members on reservation as well as off of the reservation.
Well, great. So so how exactly does that work on reservation for children who are living on the reservation? How are these children served?
Well, there's a range of scenarios based on both capacity and jurisdictional issues, but in general, tribes will have their own tribal codes regarding child welfare, so dependency codes, codes on child abuse, things like that sort of thing. Their own tribal courts who will hear dependency cases and child abuse cases. And their own child welfare programs. And this would represent more than a third of the federally recognized tribes who operated their programs solely on their own. Another group of tribes would have their own laws and perhaps their own courts, but the services would be provided by the federal government through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and or through contracts that the Bureau of Indian Affairs has with the tribe itself. And so you may have a situation where tribal child welfare services are actually being provided by federal employees. And that's the minority of situations around the country. And then another scenario is where a state would be providing the services because either the jurisdiction has been transferred to the state through federal law, or where the state and the tribe share jurisdiction through an agreement.
Sounds like there are a lot of layers. And like everything else in child welfare, it sounds like things are both complex and they differ significantly from state to state. Advocates probably need to know how their unique systems operate. There's probably no single rule for how they operate from state to state. Would that be correct?
Oh, that's exactly correct. And not only does it vary from state to state, but it can vary for different tribes in the same state. An example is right here in Oregon. We have tribes that have their own jurisdiction, so there's no state services on the reservation, to tribes that where the state does assume jurisdiction. And it is because there's a complex layer of federal policies that were enacted at different points in history, so that some tribes may be subject to state jurisdiction and other tribes not.
Interesting. So you have all these layers, and in addition, it's not just a matter of providing services on the reservation, because you mentioned that tribes have a role off the reservations as well. So can you explain that a little bit?
Yes, and it's another complex step, but it's given that the federal government had a history of trying to assimilate the American Indian through programs of relocating people from reservations to urban centers, sending them off to boarding schools for more than 100 years. Whole range of reasons why today two-thirds of all American Indians live off of reservations. And so there are American Indian people in every state, in every city in the United States. There are only 14 states that have no federally recognized tribes, and a surprise to many people is that there are approximately 32 Indian centers across the country in cities like Boston and New York, Columbus, Chicago, Los Angeles, and many of them have a wide array of services. So there are urban, non-profit, self-help organizations that are serving children off of reservations, for one thing. Another is that the jurisdiction of a tribe extends to its members even off of the reservation. So a tribe can, for example, license one of its own members to be a foster parent anywhere in the nation. Another aspect of this is that many tribes have very small reservations, but they have service areas that are much larger, so the reservation may have been diminished over time, but tribal members live near. So most federal laws are written to include tribal members living on and near, so a tribe may license foster homes off of outside the boundaries of the reservation, may even investigate child abuse and neglect jointly with a state or county near the reservation, depending on how the code of the tribe is written. And
in addition to that, there
are a number of rights under the Indian Child Welfare Act that are reserved to tribes for children off reservation.
So it sounds like an advocate who's living in a state where there are no federally recognized tribes or where there are smaller tribes still need to be concerned about how Native American and American Indian children are being served, and that there's an infrastructure in most states, at least, that they need to be aware of and that they need to kind of assess to figure out how to advocate. But you mentioned the Indian Child Welfare Act, and it sounds like that's a piece of legislation that provides a foundation for how American Indian and Alaska Native children are served. Can you talk about the role that, I know it's commonly shorthanded to ICWA, you talk about the role that that legislation plays?
Right. Well, ICWA was passed in response to advocacy by tribes after some research in the 1970s showed that one in every four Indian children had been removed from their homes, and 85 to 95% of them were in non-Indian homes. So ICWA was designed to do several things. It is first and foremost to protect the child's right as a tribal citizen. It empowers tribes to run their own child welfare systems. They always have that right under their sovereign rights, but before ICWA there wasn't really a strong mechanism for them to be able to do that. It sets up criteria that states have to follow when they take an Indian child into custody, and it protects the due process rights of parents and children, and tries to ensure that children aren't removed from their homes unnecessarily and that families get the services that they need. The state obligations under ICWA include they have to provide notice to tribes when they take a tribal child into custody. They have to provide active efforts to prevent the displacement or prevent the breakup of the Indian family as the law states. And they have to follow an order of preference in the placement of the child that starts with the child's own relatives. And several other provisions, but tribes have several rights under the Indian Child Welfare Act, and one of those rights is to intervene as a full party in state court. So anywhere in the nation that an American Indian child is before a court, the tribe has the right to appear, to give testimony, to call witnesses, to fully view the record as a full party to the case. They have the right to request transfer of jurisdiction to their own court, and that is to be granted unless there's a good cause for that not to be granted. And they have the right to set their own placement preferences, even more directive than the federal law itself. If a tribe sets up an order of preference of placement, that is the law of the land.
So it sounds like there's, because the tribes and the states have ICWA governing the relationship between the two, we also have numerous state, federal child welfare statutes on the books that impact how states operate. There's a lot of interdependence between the states and the tribes, and they're operating with a, you know, good foundation for federal law, but it must mean that there are leads to challenges in the relationship between the two. Are there ways that the states and the tribes manage this relationship? Are there protocols, laws, statutes that govern how that relationship works?
You're right on. And, you know, just like in families, when adults work together, kids get better care.
Mm-hmm.
So the first is the collaboration between tribes and states. And one of the provisions of the Indian Child Welfare Act allows for there to be tribal-state agreements. And those tribal-state agreements can be on anything from funding to service provision to resource sharing to jurisdictional issues. They're often, in addition to the broader tribal-state agreements, they're often local protocols that, like a local office of a state or county agency, will develop with a tribe that may describe how they're going to respond to those situations where the jurisdiction is blurry. So in many, many situations on a child abuse and neglect investigation, whoever gets the referral would call the other jurisdiction to go out with them on the investigation. So the investigation is done jointly. You can see some places where there's cross-deputization of law enforcement officers so that there's no and jurisdictional confusion down the road that whoever was doing the investigation had the authority to do it. So there are also funding agreements and contracts. Many states pass dollars through to tribes that under, there are 4E foster care agreements between tribes and states. And then in a number of states, in a growing number of states, there are state Indian Child Welfare Act laws. So, and those state laws help spell out in more detail how to implement the federal law.
So that's a wonderful thing for advocates to know about and to be able to explore as to whether or not those can be improved. But I'm assuming because NICWA has played such a wonderful advocacy role as well as an incredible supportive technical assistance role in these tribal and state relationships, if you had your wish list, what would you like state child welfare advocates to focus on? How can they support the work, the good, great work that you're doing, both with the tribal entities as well as the states?
Well, we have a great relationship with a number of advocacy organizations, and one of the things we always talk to our partners about is how important it is to carry the message that ICWA should be the standard by which all child welfare laws aspire to. You know, this is, all children should be treated as well in the system, in the protection of their well-being as ICWA provides, and compliance with federal law and with ICWA has been described as good casework practice. And I, just as an example of that, 18 non-Indian child welfare and child advocacy organizations filed an amicus brief in the adopted couple versus the baby girl Supreme Court case more than a year ago, supporting ICWA as good practice. So we ask our advocacy partners to promote compliance with the federal law, to promote compliance with any state ICWA laws or policies that are in place. It's also really important that our advocates advocate for compliance with other federal laws, things particularly on diligent recruitment of families, in this case Indian families, to be foster parents, do relative searches, being able to get services in place like differential response, and in this particular case, differential response that includes tribal partnerships. So those are some of the things that can be done, but always advocating for equitable funding for the state to be able, or county to be able to comply. These things are really only achieved through open dialogue with the tribes and tribal advocates. And so it is important to reach out to if you're in an advocacy organization, reach out, call the tribal child welfare director, or speak with them, arrange a meeting. It's always great to share food with one another. most tribes have websites, and you can find those individuals. And if not, there's almost always a state Indian child welfare manager who can help you connect with the tribal services.
That's a great, great list of things, Terry, and it sounds like one of the things you might advocate for is there are a number of things that advocates would already be promoting as it relates to implementation of federal law or implementation of state law and really understanding how it uniquely impacts the tribes, tribal entities, Native American, Alaska Indian children is a critical aspect of that. So really looking at it through that lens to be sure they're advocating for things that are in the best interest of those children and the tribes as well is a great piece of advice. You also mentioned, however, the Supreme Court decision, and I know that's one we have gotten a lot of questions about, and I wonder if you can tell us your thoughts about how this decision impacts the Indian Child Welfare Act.
Well, it is an important decision, and I think the most important thing to remember is that ICWA still is the law of the land. Despite some erroneous reports, ICWA was not overturned, and it's still the law of the land. It was a narrow decision regarding the circumstances of one case. However, the case law that comes behind the Supreme Court decision is still playing out, so we're seeing the impact of that decision on how judges across the country are now interpreting things like the placement preferences provision or the voluntary relinquishment of particularly unwed fathers. So we're working really hard to strengthen state laws and tribal codes because the federal law is set up as a minimum standard. So states and tribes can pass laws that have higher standards. So the decision, without question, puts more of our children at risk. So Nick was urgently working to educate tribal leaders and communities, caseworkers, state agencies across the country about what they can be doing to, first of all, preemptively help Indian parents and relatives and protect their children, but also to help states and tribes know precisely what they can do, what can be written into state laws to mitigate what we think is the unfortunate decisions that affected many of our families. So state level advocates can help pass laws similar to Wisconsin and Washington State and Michigan and others because that federal law is a minimum standard. And tribes across the country are looking right now at the passing their own codes and reinforcing the placement preferences under the federal law.
Well, excellent. And we at Spark would love to support you in your work on that, and we will be working with, for our listeners, the NICWA to make sure that the resources that they develop to support these kinds of proactive actions in the state legislatures will be available to you so you can learn more about them if you want to play a role, which we would wholeheartedly support. So I'll just give you one last opportunity because you're such a great leader on this issue, 41 years of advocacy. Can you tell us any other policy issues that your organization is focusing on at this time and ones that state advocates might want to learn about?
Well, thank you for that opportunity. As always, NICWA works to make sure that tribes have the resources to do this work. And since 1990, we have opened a number of funding streams to tribes that weren't there before. And today, as you know, advocates across the country are working diligently on child welfare financing reform, and we're right there with the Shaw Walter League and Amy Casey Foundation and many others who are leading this work. And our effort is really to increase the funding to operate in-home services or family preservation support services aimed at keeping as many children out of the child welfare system as possible. It is so important that tribes be able to provide things like differential response and especially in partnership with states. So because the disproportionality rates in placement for Native children are still very high, in some states seriously so. So we see that having more services for families in-home and avoiding placements and being able to comply with the active efforts provisions, I think, will help reduce those disproportionate rates of placement. We also have a major effort, as you can imagine, right now with ICWA compliance. And the Supreme Court case really did highlight a lack of compliance around the country and some serious problems, and particularly in some jurisdictions. And so the other thing that the case revealed is that there's a number of unscrupulous and perhaps even illegal adoption practices going on, and we're asking the Department of Justice to investigate these unscrupulous practices, and particularly from the point of view of this being a systematic violation of the civil rights of children. One adoption agency had bragged of placing 50 Indian children outside of ICWA and getting away with it. It was posted on the internet. So we know that there's a systematic non-compliance with the law, and we're asking the Justice Department to investigate. I have to mention that we can continuously promote and encourage Native families to become foster parents. It is so important that we have relatives who step up, and we have American Indian people who become foster parents, whether that's for a tribe or a state or a county. We're really always trying to help with that recruitment of Native families for our children.
Well, you certainly have hit on several issues that crosswalk with SPARC priorities, that crosswalk with the agendas that we've heard of from the state policy advocates. So we really look forward to working with you and with NICWA and with your wonderful network of advocates across the country in the future on your agenda and ensure that it can be, you know, mutually supportive of the things that the state advocates are working on. So thank you so much, Terry, for your time. Again, we're honored to have you as part of our national network and our national advisory board, and we appreciate your time this morning.
Well, we certainly appreciate the work that you do, and you've been a wonderful partner for NICWA, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.